Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. I am Cody, and today we're continuing the theme of July with awesome video game franchises. Today's episode, just like I explained last week, is going to be about Borderlands. Borderlands, for the people who do not know, is an action role-playing first-person shooter video game set in a space western science fiction setting. Anyways, it's a space western. It's pretty awesome. So it consists of three main games, and then two spinoff games, which I'm not going to focus on today, mainly because they're not as good as the original three. So it starts off with Borderlands, the very first one. Basic premise of the game, or of this franchise itself, is you play as one of, as of many right now, but each game consists of four different heroes that are different ability types. They range from heavy gunners to snipers to ninjas and things like that. So there's a lot of different characters throughout the three games. The very first game, Borderlands, released way back in September of 2012, is... October 2009, 2012 was Borderlands 2. So 2009 came out on basically every console at the time: Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, Windows, and OS X, or Mac operating system. And so you had in that game, you got to choose on all the games. You choose four character types that they give you at the beginning of the game. And then you progress through the game with those ones. The guns are different. You have different. In the first game, you had abilities that were specialized by each of the characters. So one of them was better with sniping, and one's better with like rockets and all different ones like that. So you basically got to you get to pick from Roland, who's the soldier, Mordecai, who's the hunter, Lilith, who's the siren, and Brick, who's the berserker. So and then there's a bunch of NPCs or non-player characters that you meet throughout the game as you go through. But those are the four players four characters you could choose to play as when you start the game. I guess the biggest thing when you started the first one is you kind of had to pick what kind of guns how the play style you like to play was. Because if you like to play as, a tank, you'd pick Brick. And Brick would be, he'd be your berserker, but he's bigger, better with bigger guns, things like that. You had Mordecai, who was better at sniping. And he using his, and each one of them had a special skill. Mordecai had a creature, which is a blood wing, that assisted him, and he would use that to as like a distance weapon. It's kind of like a protect you while you're sniping at people type thing. So it's interesting the way they set it up. A lot of people refer to them as hero shooters because you play as a certain type instead of an all around one, which is what some people didn't like about Borderlands and a lot of these the games that were similar to it with the class system. Destiny was that same way. Destiny 1 and 2, where you picked a role, and that role gave you different abilities. Biggest difference, like in this one, is each character you played as had different skills and were specific weapon types that were better with. So if you liked sniping, you'd pick Mordecai. If you liked assault rifles, you'd pick Roland. If you liked more of the mystical powers, you'd pick Lilith. And of course, Brick would be the berserker. He'd be like the hand-to-hand smasher face with stuff and up-close killing. Shotguns, I believe, were a big thing hit for him too. The biggest thing about this is it's a loot-based game. The guns and the add-ons for the guns were really what you were going for. As you went through the world, you found these caches or vaults that would give you different weapons, and they had something like 17 million variations of the weapons. And the way it worked is, if you got a weapon, there was essentially different attributes for that gun. So you could find the same type of gun, like the same shotgun you could find multiple times, but every time you found it, it had a different variation to it. So it either had a bigger clip or a faster reload speed, or it had a faster rate of fire, or it had a damage boost when you got whatever. And you had different ones like that. So you go through and you find the different variations. And when you find the one you like, you basically, you know, kind of keep it for a long time until you find something a little better. So you kind of balance your play and as you go through. And then the overall, it's up to a 4-player co-op in the game. You can be joined by 3 of your friends. You can have multiple of the same characters too. If you wanted all roll as Roland, you could. But it was better, well balanced if you had a mix of the 4 characters in your different players, so you could have range as well as up close. And of course, support. You had to have support too, because you're gonna get hurt. So that's kind of the breakdown of the first one. So the story of the first Borderlands game is the Doll Corporation all the guns in the game are made by a different manufacturer. So there's the Doll Corporation, there's the Hyperion Corporation, there's Atlas, there's a bunch of different ones. I can't remember all the, not, was Atlas one of them? I should probably pull a list up. It doesn't matter. And you play as what they refer to as a Vault Hunter. And the Doll Corporation has basically left the planet Pandora. And then these Fortune Hunters or Fortune Seekers, or what they call Vault Hunters, there's this fabled vault that's this big thing that's supposed to have untold riches and power that you can release, that you can get from being in there. So this is the overview of the game. So Borderlands begins sometime after the Doll Corporation abandons Pandora. Several fortune seekers, including the 4 player characters, arrive in search of the fabled vault. After discovering the town of Firestone, the players begin to receive instructions from an image of a mysterious woman known as the Guardian Angel. The players meet Claptrap, who is an NPC that later becomes a playable character in one of their games. We'll get there in a little bit. And a dude named Dr. Zed. He and Claptrap help you establish what your reputation for killing several bandits and other bosses, eventually leading to the collection of the first alien artifact needed to open the vault. So as you go through, you meet different characters that give you different quests to go on to eventually lead to all the different artifacts needed to open the vault. So pretty self-explanatory. The humor of the game is amazing. Claptrap is the de facto mascot for the game. If you've ever seen the game, he is the one-wheeled, two-armed, single-eye, essentially triangle robot that you see on all the covers, and eventually, like I said, playable character in the pre-sequel. So throughout the adventure, you're unlocking the mystery that is Pandora and the vault, this fabled vault that you're supposed to be going after. And of course, hopefully finding out more about the Guardian Angel as they explain the story of Pandora and why the Doll Corporation has abandoned the planet. So as you go through, you meet a bunch of the bad guys that are in the game. You meet a lot more of the NPCs. You kill a bunch of alien creatures from all over the planet with all these varying guns and pretty awesome adventure. It's fun, especially if you play with other people, because it really does add to the fun and the excitement of, you know, finding good loot and adventuring around Pandora's waste, different wastelands, and of course shooting things in the face with large caliber guns. Is always a fun part too. So that's the first one. That's Borderlands. Borderlands 2 introduces everybody to a straight up protagonist, which is something you didn't antagonist you didn't have in the first game really. And his name is Handsome Jack. Handsome Jack is the leader and president of Hyperion, which is the big company that kind of takes over Pandora after the events of the first game. So if the setting for the second game is 5 years after the events of Borderlands, four new Vault Hunters appear. So the Vault Hunters in the first game, Roland, Mordecai, Lilith, and Brick, basically guided by this mysterious guardian angel, have essentially taken over, or not taken over, but have built factions to help combat Hyperion. So when you start the second game, like I said, you play one of four brand new Vault Hunters. They have their own special abilities, and unlike the first game, they're not strictly their character type isn't specified by a type of weaponry. Each have their own unique skills that are more of the play type you want versus the gun type you like from the first game, which I, again, like I said, is what people didn't really like about the first one. Is if you wanted a certain type of character, you had to have a certain type of gun. You're better at it with certain characters, so you're locked into a character type with only those skills and things like that. So in the second game, they change it up, so there's classes still, and the classes are more of the special abilities. So you have, again, you have four. You have Axton the Commando. He can summon a turret that provides offense. You have Maya, air quotes, the Siren, as a Psylocke who traps enemies in a sphere of energy for a few seconds. You have Zero the Assassin, who can temporarily become invisible and spawn a hologram decoy to distract enemies while he attacks them without them knowing, doing bonus damage. Then you have Salvador the Gunzerker. So he can use his titular ability, so the Gunzerker ability, basically temporarily dual wield any weapons. So you can pick a weapon and he can basically dual wield them for a short period of time, doing massive damage and adding bonuses to your damage as well as your experience used when you're using those. I only played as two of these characters throughout my play. I should say in the first game I played as Roland and a little bit as Brick. But in the second game I started off as Axton, who's the commando, and I played as Zero for a little bit. I beat through it, but I really stuck with Axton. So big thing of the second one, as you progress through and you level up your character and your skills, you had skill trees, as they call them. There's three different ones you could choose. Essentially, you put your skills through all of them, but you could never max all three out. So you had to really choose which two trees you wanted the most out of, so you could focus on maxing those out to get the best two, and then you could throw in skills in the other ones to fortify everything. And that's the role-playing portion of it. And then through those, you got new skills, upgrades to those, your abilities, and then bonuses of certain things. And each one, again, was had different things for what they were. The Gunzerker had, automatic reload things, and the turret had upgrades where it had missiles, and you could put it on the walls, and you can get a second one, and different things like that as you went through the progression. So as you leveled up, you eventually got better ones and better skills, and upgraded your skills to be better and more damage dealing throughout the game. And of course, same thing persists. Your goal is to kill things and find better loot to better suit your play style, things like that. So I didn't even go over DLC. So there was a bunch there was four in the first game for DLC, and this is Borderlands is one of the games that really did a good job with downloadable content. So it's less about downloadable content and they're more expansions, because they expanded on the experience of the game, where some games, when you do downloadable content, is just a separate adventure or a separate type of thing. Like one of my favorite games of recent years is Ghost Recon Wildlands, which is a jump forward to next week, everybody, when I talk about Tom Clancy franchise and my favorite games in there. But in that one, the DLC was not that great, because it didn't expand on the game. There were different game types, and they just weren't as good as the main game, and they didn't bring anything into it. You didn't get extra stuff for the main game with the DLC. They were just new adventures you played, and they weren't that great, because they added all these cool new things, but you couldn't utilize them in the regular game, which was kind of shitty. But in Borderlands, you actually had the ability to, as it went through, and you got new things, added new things to the game. You got you get to bring those over to the regular game as you go through and you replay as true Vault Hunter mode, and things like that. So in the first game, you had like I said, you had four different expansions or part of the DLC. You had the Zombie Island of Dr. Ned, which, if you were paying attention earlier, there was an NPC character that you met, who was Dr. Zed. I know, it's awesome, right? And this is like, you basically go to this island, and you have to figure out what's going on with all these zombies overrunning this tourist island and things like that. Really fun. Then you had Mad Moxie's Underground Riot, which was like a Thunderdome type thing. And basically, these riot arenas, there were three of them, had varying degrees of difficulty as they went up. So you, instead of kind of being like a new area to adventure for, you just went in and played these different, wave-based matches to get better stuff and then things like that. Then you have the Secret Army of General Knox, which was one of the bigger expansions of the four that came out for the first game. You got an all-new playable area, just like you did in the island, or the Zombie Island of Dr. Ned. You got new weapons, you got new level cap as you went through, to gain more abilities, and then of course you get to take those over the main game. And then you had Claptrap's New Robot Revolution, which was the last of the expansions or DLCs for the first game, which basically you were being led by Claptrap and a revolution for the robots that are being misused by people like Hyperion and Dahl and different like that. Super hilarious. Each level pack or each DLC you got gave you the ability to level up even further, so you got more of a maximum level you can play through. I was late to the I should have said this earlier I was late to the game on the first game. I I saw it. I never played it. I was kind of put off by the whole hero shooter thing from the first game because I read a bunch of stuff about how you couldn't tailor the character to your own likings. It was skill-based and then weapon-based, and I wasn't really into that. And then I had a bunch of friends that played it, and I asked a bunch of them, hey, like, the collector's edition came out that had all four DLC and the main game in it. It was a Christmas sale, I think. It went on sale. It was like $20 for the collector's edition that came with the main game and all four DLCs. And I was like, fuck it. Dave played it. Taj played it. Clint played it. Might as well jump in. I'll check it out. And it's only $20, and it seems like a shit ton of game. So I got it. Loved it. And then I believe shortly after that, they announced the sequel, Borderlands 2, which I'll talk more about right now, was about to come out too. Like, literally, I think I got the collection Christmas time of 2010, and then we heard about it. I think they announced it shortly after E3. It might have been E3 when they announced Borderlands 2 in 2011, and of course it came out in 2012, and it had its own bunch of fun, which I'll talk about right now. So Borderlands 2, like I said, I explained all that. So the DLC for that one was a little different. They did two seasons, and they did some added-on stuff later on. So they really wanted to expand on it because they were really big on, hey, look what we did with the first game. This is going to be even bigger of ridiculousness that we're going to go and we're going to do on there. So in season one, you had four major packs, and then each one had their own kind of story narrative and kind of play style, which is pretty cool. The first one, which is Captain Scarlet and her pirate's booty, is set into a desert land on Pandora where there are pirates, and then you basically fight alongside with Captain Scarlet to overthrow the other pirate factions and adventure forth. And you got vehicles in this one that were they're a thing called sand skiffs, which were little sand air boat things. Then that one was really fun. Then you had Mr. Torque's Champion of Carnage, a Champion of Carnage, which was very similar to Mad Moxie's Underdome. It was a wave-based championship, but it had a bigger open area around it, too. You did adventures through, and it was very big into vehicles in that one as well. A lot of vehicle races. That one was cool because you had this character who is named Mr. Torque, and he is based on essentially Macho Man Randy Savage, and was very themed after WWE or WCW, technically would be the thing, the Campaign of Carnage. You got in this, they had appearances from Mad Moxie as well as Tiny Tina, who we'll get to in a little bit, who's another NPC from the main game that got our own DLC, which we'll get to in a little bit. You basically fought through your ranks to level up to be the most badass champion of this essentially Thunderdome type thing, too, where they had vehicles and big wave-based fighting fights you had to go through to raise your ranks, and you had a boss for every round that you had to take out to then move up the ranks to go after the main guy. But it's basically the whole thing was basically you're becoming the badass or it's set in the badass crater of Badassitude, which is where this DLC takes place, where the campaign of carnage takes place with Torque, which is pretty fun. Then you have Sir Hammerlock's Big Game Hunt. So Sir Hammerlock is an NPC you meet in the game, kind of guides you through some of the story and some missions early on. And this one is more of a darker, foreboding type thing. So you basically go on a big game hunt, and your basic job is to help Hammerlock find and kill creatures of better and bigger statute as you go through. So the bigger the animal, the bigger the reward, the bigger the reward, the better, bigger fame, and so on and so forth. So the interesting about it is you have to get all these rare animals of Pandora, and then you battle a former scientist of Hyperion, who is attempting to create a clone of Handsome Jack, because this all takes place after Jack has been defeated. Spoiler alert from the end of the game. And then it's again just like the other ones, has this one main theme and then has a bigger story to try and tell with it, which is pretty fun. And then you have the fourth one in season one, which is Tiny Tina's Assault on Dragon Keep. So this one is one of my favorites because it really changed up how you played it. So with this was part of the season pass for season one, and I think they really took what everyone was saying about the first game and the way it played. And then with those first three, so Captain Scarlet's Pirate Booty, Mr. Torque's Campaign of Carnage, and Sir Hammerlock's Big Game Hunt, were the direct correlation of what people liked and what they wanted to see different from the first game and the first game's DLC. Then there was Tiny Tina's Assault on Dragon Keep. What makes this different? Well, let me tell you, everybody. It was a role-playing game inside of a role-playing game. So you got transported into a D&D-style game that Tiny Tina was running as a tabletop game with the different NPCs from the game. So it sounds really bizarre, and I'll explain what happens. So the campaign is set within a world of a tabletop role-playing game known as Bunkers and Badasses, Dungeons and Dragons. Get it? Tiny Tina serves as a game master or DM, sometimes deciding to modify the game world and add bosses and enemies or NPCs whenever she feels like it. The world is fantasy themed with skeletons, orcs, treants, which are the ents, the tree creatures from Lord of the Rings, and dragons that features enemies as well as appearances from other Borderlands characters as residents through the different worlds in there, such as Handsome Jack. You have appearances from other people, Brick, Roland, Lilith, all of them show up in there at one point in it, and it's fantastic. Basically, this is a spoiler as well, part of the story. It's all basically Tina's way of coping with the death of Roland, who she sees as a father figure from his death in the main game, following the thing. So, it's basically like a therapy session for Tina to accept the death of Roland. It's hilarious. It's super funny, and I think it's one of the best things that they've done in the Borderlands series by far. Then you have Season 2. So Season 2 it's a season pass they released that had five different playable DLCs that, again, added to the fun of the main game as well as just the game itself. You had TK Baha's Bloody Harvest. TK Baha is a NPC you meet in the first game, and he makes his return to from the first scene in the first game. Then you see him on the zombie island of Dr. Ned, and then he basically appears in this expansion, which is a Halloween themed expansion that had everything from giant pumpkin monsters to headless horsemen and all that fun stuff. Super hilarious one as well. You had the horrible hunger. The second one you had was the horrible hunger of the ravenous Waddle Gobbler, which is a Thanksgiving themed one. You're going to find there's a theme going on through these ones that we're bringing up. And it is the second is what they refer to as the Headhunter Pack, which is the season two season pass. And it is a parody of the Hunger Games with a Thanksgiving Day theme, where you basically complete in a tournament organized by Mr. Torek to defeat a gnarly, giant, murderous turkey. And then you had How Marcus Saved Mercury Day, or Mercenary Day. This is the third one in the Headhunters pack. This is the Christmas-themed one. And it is about finding Marcus's missing gun shipment train while saving the ex-bandit town of Gingerton from the evil snowman Tender Snowflake. It's ridiculous, I know, but it's amazing. Then you have the fourth one from the Headhunter pack, which was a Valentine's themed one, which was called Mad Moxie and the Wedding Day Massacre. And it's basically about Mad Moxie's plan to have two Goliaths, one from Zafords and one from Hodunks, to marry and basically bring together the two families, which is a spinoff of Romeo and Juliet, the two fighting factions that you're trying to bring together. Yes, I know, it's ridiculous. This one, they added a new thing to the game as well, which included new weather effects and some new enemies, which is pretty cool as well. And then the last one of the Headhunter pack was Sir Hammerlock versus the son of Crowermax. I can't remember how to say it. So this one was a if I remember correctly, this the one that was themed after St. Patrick's Day, right? I believe it was. And basically, it's a playoff of the Secret Army of General Knox add-on from the first game, where the son of the main guy from General Knox DLC, who is Carmix Jr., the son of the great crab worm from the Secret Army of General Knox, is seeking vengeance on Roland, Lilith, Brick, and Mordecai. The plot introduces Sparky Flint, son of the boss character, Captain Flint, who, along with five other people whose family and friends have been killed by the six new Vault Hunters, seek revenge on them in this one. That makes sense. That one's hard to go by. So, in this one, Roland is obviously dead still. Sir Hammerlock, Brick, Mordecai, and Lilith are on vacation on Warm Bam Island. A large monster kidnaps Hammerlock, and then basically you have to go and save him. There you go. Pretty easy to figure out, right? So then you have extra stuff they released later on, which is the Mechromancer pack, which added a new playable character. So you had the what they call the Premier Club, the Metzger Minster Pack. The Premier Club is a pre-order bonus that comes with golden guns, a relic, golden key, and early access to the fifth playable character, the Mechromancer, after it was released. So you, if you pre-ordered it, you got it. You could buy it separately. But then when it came out, you got the new playable character, the in it, which you had an ability, well, Mechromancer. It's basically this, you had to create robots from the dead to fight along with you. You had Psycho and Ultimate Vault Hunter upgrade pack, which added a level cap increase from 50 to 60, a new game mode called Ultimate Vault Hunter mode, which I mentioned earlier, which is a third playthrough mode of the main game that basically scales the enemies from 50 to 61. It makes it harder to play through, but you have better rewards as you go through. And is a free download for all players who purchased the season pass for the game. The second pack, which is the Psycho pack, contains a sixth playable character for Borderlands 2 called a Psycho named Krieg. Psychos are psychotic enemies fought during the main Borderlands 2 campaign, who are primarily melee-focused characters with an action skill called the Buzz Axe Rampage, which is basically as it sounds, you go on a rampage with a weapon called a Buzz Axe, and you go basically invincible for a short period of time, hacking, slashing your way through all the enemies. And then, last but not least, in Borderlands 2, downloadable content is the Ultimate Vault Hunter Upgrade Pack 2, Digistruct Peak Challenge. This is one that a lot of people didn't really like. It was a separate add-on that was not part of the season pass. You had to buy it separately from the other ones. But what it did is it basically raised the level cap from 61 to 72 and then gave you this thing, this new place to play on called Digistruct Peak Challenge. It's a new map where Patricia Tanis, one of the many NPCs you meet throughout the game, sets a thing up where you basically go on a map and you fight progressively harder enemies than what you are at the time to better your skills and get better drops to then better going. So you start off, and it's again, it's waves. You go through this map. When you get to the end, you start over and you like basically lapse through this, and the enemies get progressively harder throughout there, but you don't get to reload on ammo or do upgrades until the very end. It's pretty interesting little new way of playing. But it also added in additional backpack ammo and bank slots that you can be purchased with from the black market, which is an internal game unlocks throughout the game as you collect different collectibles throughout the game to play as it. So that's Borderlands 2 and all their mini DLC. Moving on from there, we have one of the funniest game titles ever to be created by any game, if you ask me. So this one is called Borderlands the Pre-Sequel. So the word pre-sequel, it's a hyphen, so it's pre-sequel. And the reason why is it takes place between the events of Borderlands 1 and the events of Borderlands 2. And you basically play as an all-new Vault Hunter, one of four that are introduced in this. And you are basically working for the Hyperion Corporation, unbeknownst to you, and the help to basically bring Handsome Jack to the rise of power to where he is in Borderlands 2. So you're one of the people who is responsible for making him the tyrant and murderous scoundrel that he is in the second game. It's a pretty interesting way of doing it. So again, the reason it's called the pre-sequel is because it's a prequel to the second one, but a sequel to the first one. So it's a pre-sequel. Super clever. Again, you play as four not so brand new playable characters, protagonists. You actually play as It's a couple NPCs from previous Borderlands games. So what your first one is, I'm going to break down all three of these. So you have Athena, who's known as the Gladiator. It's a rogue assassin from the Atlas Corporation, introduced in the Borderlands DLC campaign, Secret Army of General Knox. Her primary skill is she has a shield that can absorb damage and the ability to upgrade it to use it like a weapon and throw it. It bounces off and kills multiple enemies in a row. Pretty awesome. You have Nisha, the Lawbreaker, who first appeared in Borderlands 2 as an unnamed sheriff of the town Lynchwood, which you play through. And her primary skill is the Showdown. Increased gun damage and speed, and also allows the player to quickly switch between enemies in the area and chain kills together. Then she has another skill tree, Law and Order, that contains two different ones. That one's a healing one, and one's a damage buff, if I remember correctly. And then she has a rifle woman one, which incorporates skills for point shooting and reload speed. You have Claptrap, the Frag Trap, as he's known. He is the last remaining robot of his kind as of Borderlands 2. His skill, which is called Vault Hunter.exe, generates random effects depending on the current situation. These effects can have positive or negative impact on the players and their other party members among them during the effects of the different skills. So during this, you have variations of the different characters you have. So the different characters throughout the franchise itself. So you have Roland, you have Lilith, you have Mordecai, you have Brick, you have Axton, all of them on there. It's pretty hilarious because he kind of transforms and looks like Claptrap doing cosplay of all those different characters. Pretty hilarious. Then you have Wilhelm, who is the Enforcer, who is originally from he's the second major boss in Borderlands 2 that you take down. He has two drones called Wolf and Saint. Wolf serves as an offensive role by attacking other enemies, and Saint defends Wilhelm by providing shield and health regeneration. Pretty fun. That's the one I played with the most in the pre-sequel, along with Athena, which I did not play a whole lot of, but I did play a bunch of Wilhelm. And eventually he's super OP because you level up the drones so much, they start taking out enemies in one shots, and you get so much incoming damage buff and healing that you're essentially vulnerable for super loud amount of times. It's super kind of crazy. Then you have two additional characters that were added in downloadable content. The first is Jack the Doppelganger, who is a man named Timothy Lawrence, working as a body double for Handsome Jack, who can summon digital copies of Jack to fight along him during battles. You have the second one, which is Arilla, who is the Baroness, and sister of Sir Hammerlock, who is an experimental frost DMDM shard, basically does elemental damage to enemies throughout the battle. So yeah, that was the characters for Borderlands pre-sequel. You had downloadable content for this as well. You had the two different expansions for the main game, and then you had two for the main game, or two that were the character ones, and then two which were the campaign ones. So the first DLC was the Handsome Jack doppelganger. You get to focus on that one, and then you have the campaign that goes along with that one, which is the Handsome Onslaught, which was basically retelling the shortened version of the game's story from Borderlands 2 of Axton and Gage, and the third playthrough of the Ultimate Vault Hunter mode, basically raising your level cap to 60, along with additional missions that ties into Handsome Jack's presence on one of the spin-off games, Tales from Borderlands. You had the second character download, which is Lady Rilla Hammerlock, which I explained earlier is Hammerlock's sister. And then the campaign to go along with that was the Claptastic Voyage and the Ultimate Vault Hunter upgrade Pack 2, which added, it was a play on the Fantastic Voyage, where you basically got to go through the body of Claptrap fighting different things trying to destroy him from the inside. It was a pretty interesting one on there too. But that's it for Borderlands franchise. And that's it for this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. Again, come back next week when I will be talking about the Tom Clancy franchise. Brief overview of what games are in that, and I'm going to choose my favorites of those ones, which if you know me, and I told you one earlier, you're going to be able to guess at least three of them, which I think I'm going to do to my top five. Anyways, that's it for this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. Again, I am Cody, and as usual, let's be awesome.